Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The number to join us, 347-884-8327. You're listening to the Audio Road Podcast. We're going to be doing a one-hour podcast. Anything goes. No commercials, no sponsors, just your calls and questions. So if you've got a question, we can talk about anything you want to talk about. Trucks, money, fuel mileage, technology, getting started as an owner-operator, growing your business, finding freight, using brokers, anything you want to talk about, we'll tackle it here. All you have to do is bring the question to the table. If you're on the line now and you have a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, and you haven't already done so, press 1 on your phone. That lets Lisa know that you want to join the conversation. And we take the calls in order, so the sooner you press 1, the higher the odds are that we will get to your call in this hour. So we're going to jump right into the phone calls tonight. We're going to start off in Iowa. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Kevin. How are you tonight?
Doing great. What's on your mind this evening?
I noticed that my fuel filters I've changed a couple of them in the last couple of weeks, and I've noticed they've been really black. So I was looking in my fuel tanks, and the inside of my fuel tanks are just coated in some black stuff.
Okay. Have you been able to touch the black stuff?
No, I haven't.
Okay, that's the net. We've identified three different substances that will turn your fuel black, and then we need to figure out which one of the three you have. The most common is algae or some sort of microbe. So that one will feel slimy. So if you cut into a filter or if you can get inside your tank or if you can touch it, it's going to feel slimy, slippery. That's the most common. If that's what you've got, then you go to my best recommendation is go to West Marine or any marina, but West Marine for sure carries a product called StarTron. And StarTron will actually, it's an enzyme that kind of feeds on the algae and will get rid of it. Now, when you put the StarTron in, and don't use more than what they recommend. It's not one of those things that if a little's good, a lot is better. Measure it the way they recommend it and make sure you've got several sets of fuel filters and a filter wrench with you because if it's bad enough, when the system starts to clean out, I've seen fuel filters clog in 100 miles.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Yeah, now, if it's not algae, if it's not slippery, if it's sticky and kind of sinks to the bottom of everything, like if you take off a filter and you can get to the bottom, if the black stuff is sitting in the bottom and it's sticky, then that is what's called asphaltene. And Cummins, the best place to go is a Cummins engine shop. They make a product called asphaltene, and it's actually an asphaltene cleaner. That one's easy. Dump it in the tank. Usually doesn't clog filters. The asphaltene cleaner will dissolve it, and it usually goes away and doesn't come back. The third one, and it's pretty rare, is soot. And if you can feel soot in the filter or in the fuel, it'll feel gritty, like sand almost, but much finer. And that's usually some sort of an injector or top-end problem, but that's pretty rare.
You know, and the fuel looks clear. I mean, I can see the bottom of the tanks in there. It's just kind of that outside, and you can see, like, right to the top where the fuel stopped.
Right.
I mean, it stopped right there.
That's more than likely algae, and the reason is that algae doesn't really grow in the fuel. It grows in the water that's in the fuel. So as you get that separation of fuel and water around the edges, that's where the algae grows.
Okay. Okay, well, I will try to get that, and I will do some figuring. And now, like that stuff that you were talking about you get from Cummins, is that kind of a more of a Cummins problem? Because I have a 12.7 Detroit, a 2000.
It does tend to. What happened was we didn't really hear of asphaltene until after EGR. With two things happened. EGR increased the temperature of the engines, and the fuel quality went down when we went to low sulfur and some of the other blends. And it was a combination of the two. When we take a low-quality fuel and we get it hot, that's when we develop asphaltenes. And I think Cummins developed the product primarily because the ISX tends to be the worst. Doesn't mean you couldn't get it in any engine. It's pretty rare in a pre-emission engine, though.
And now if it's algae, what's the best way to treat that? Do you do it like every tank that you get? I mean, you fill
now,
it off?
And the Startron, like I say, dump it in, make sure you've got filters. At some point, you're going to know it's clean because you won't be clogging filters anymore.
Okay.
And I don't like to dump any kind of additive in all the time. I would keep an eye on your fuel and your filters, and if you see it coming back, you could treat again, but I wouldn't treat all the time.
Because I, like, have that Davco system on here, and I just noticed the bowl, you know, the fuel going up, up, and up at the top.
Right.
And would it be a good idea, once you see that fuel go to the top, I mean, change the filter before you have a problem where it's starving itself for fuel?
Yeah, I mean, when you know, if everything's running right and your fuel is clean, you know you can run that filter right to the top. You really don't get much restriction, and you change it, you get all your use out of it. But once we know you've got this problem, I would start changing it when it hits about 3/4.
Okay. Okay.
Until you see that that is slowing down and you don't see the black in the filter anymore and it's clearing up. And then once it does.
Okay, and so now would you recommend to treat your fuel and let it sit over a weekend while it's sitting there, or do you treat it and go? Or
just treat it and go, yeah.
Treat and go, okay. Okay. All right, well, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's go next to Virginia. Aaron, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Kim. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
Man, I just checking in. You told me sometimes just check in with you and let you know how I'm doing. And I finally could get through to you and talk to you, and you and Lisa.
Well, good. Glad to hear from you. So how are things going?
Man, I'm liking what's going on, Kevin. I wanted to share my numbers with you, you know. And told Lisa to ask Lisa to put up the profit gauges and let you get a look see and see what's going on with my operation.
Got it.
Tell me
got
what
it.
You think.
I got the numbers here in front of me. So you're pretty happy with things?
Absolutely, Kevin. Absolutely. I'm not happy with the maintenance so far, but that's, you know, I bought an older tractor, so maintenance expenses associated with, you know, having the older tractor, some things. I bought some tires and everything. So, I mean, aside from that, Kevin, I like bringing in because I think, like, as far as what I bring home, a person with my experience could never, I don't think I could get half of what I'm making, you know, net
good.
In my pocket.
Good.
You know what I mean, Kevin?
Excellent. You know, and I want to let everybody know so they kind of know the history here that, so how long have you been driving? When did you first start driving a truck?
I would tell you this, Kevin. I bought the truck in November. I got my authority in December. I got out on the road and because, like, I really had no over-the-road experience, to be truthful, Kevin. I got out February, March, April, and May pretty much and just learned the roads, learned what life on the road was all about, you know, and I'd say
right.
I made a conscious effort around mid-May that started in June that I was going to, that's when I really updated my Profit Gators, because I was subscribed to Profit Gators and hadn't really done anything with it until June. And that's when I went back and did all the previous months and everything. So, like I said, I really got into the numbers starting with June 1st. And I jokingly say that's my fiscal year starting in June 1. And since that point, I really like what my numbers have looked like, you know. To answer your question in short, I got out there in February.
So here's the point that I want to make to the other people listening is that I've worked with a lot of people who have 10, 15, even 20 years experience driving, and then they decide they want to become an owner-operator, and they have lots of experience. They know a lot about the industry, and yet they do everything wrong, and they suffer, and they struggle, and they're not making any money. And on the other hand, you walked in not knowing the industry at all, not having any experience, did something that I actually recommend against, but with you I kind of encouraged it because you were doing the hard work, which is you bought a truck, you got your own authority. I mean, you went all in. And here you are already in the first year succeeding at it. But you've done the hard work. You did everything right. You came to the CMC before you did anything. You asked a lot of questions. I know you spent time with Bruce. You really, when you ask a question, you listen. So I just want to point out to people that, because I've had calls on the air where somebody will say, well, I've been a driver for 2 months and I want to be an owner-operator, and I start to help them. And I get a bunch of emails, nasty emails from people saying, you should have never encouraged that guy. He doesn't have enough experience. Experience isn't the issue here, really. I've made the statement, and I know I piss people off when I do this, but I've made the statement, I can almost teach a monkey to drive the truck.
Right.
Driving the truck, you know, it's just not rocket science. We teach a lot of people to drive trucks, and most of them don't get much better after the first 6 months. So the business side of things, though, the numbers and understanding the business and making good decisions, those are things that are much more important, and you've been very good at those things. And it shows because you're off to a great start. So let's go over some numbers. I love this first number. You are at $1.75 a mile for all miles. That's outstanding. I mean, it really is. For being young in the industry, young in general, not having a lot of experience, to generate $1.75 a mile for all miles is a great start. So congratulations on that. Your fixed costs are actually running a little high. Your insurance costs are high, but that's because of your lack of experience. And the rest of them, are you leasing a trailer?
No, I bought my trailer.
Okay. All right, so I'm seeing trailer payments under lease. We might want to get that corrected in your Profit Gauges account. That should be under trailer purchase, but that's no big deal. It would still come out the same. Fuel cost right now, you're at 59 cents a mile. So that's certainly one of the areas we would want to focus on. You could get that down another 10 cents. You could get that in your operation. We could get that to 49 cents a mile instead of 59, and that all goes back into your pocket. You already mentioned maintenance, and when you buy an older truck, we fully expect, especially the way we recommended you do it, buy an older truck, get started, get out there, start making money, and fix it up over time. So we expect that the first 18 to 24 months, that per mile cost on maintenance is going to be high. And yours is, that 24 cents. I mean, ultimately, we will get that down under 10, no matter how long you keep the truck. If you decided to keep the truck for another million miles, we could get that down under 10. You're at 24 now. That would put another 14 cents to the bottom line, plus the 10 cents from fuel would be 24 cents. that we could fairly easily add to the bottom line. Right now you're at 30 cents a mile. So if we get that 24 cents.
And I wanted to remind you, Kevin, like I said, those numbers are reflective of a time when I was not really trying to. I put some money to the side. Like I said, I was pretty much an apprentice for a little while, just trying to learn the ropes in trucking.
Yeah.
If you pay attention to maybe the months of June, July, August, September, and especially October, you will see the progression from each month and how, you know, just last month, I believe my net was 97 cents. I think the month before was 83 cents per mile. This is what I bring, you know, after expenses. The month before, I think it was 63 cents. So I've been progressing. I just identified another customer that might add another 10 cents per mile to my net, you know, when it's all said and done. So I'm looking to generate over $1 a mile that I bring home, put in my pocket. You know, and I said, with my experience, I couldn't go anywhere and get half of that.
No. Don't you love having the numbers like that in front of you so you can see that progression and improvement?
Can I be honest with you, man? It's yes and no, because every month I do better, and I'm like, oh, okay. For instance, I think it was for October, $2.23. I think it was $2.23 for October, for instance. Since like I said, July, I think all my miles have been over $2 a mile, all miles.
Wow.
And so I see this and I feel under pressure to duplicate it or do better than the previous month. And that's the bad thing about it. So, yeah, it is very interesting, and I like keeping up with them. And I wanted to get through to you on Sunday because of the fact that you were talking about things that, or Saturday, you were talking about things that I believe the thing was something that you might want to deal with or looking ahead, and my thing was looking towards the slow season, you know. So I look at my numbers and I want to continue that progression throughout the cold season. I've just been building relationships, and like I said, I think I can do it through the cold season, Kevin. You know, when things go down in the dry van market.
Yeah, and you know the other thing about really understanding your numbers is the more you do it, the better you get, and then you'll start to identify trends. And one of the beauties of identifying trends is when we identify a slow month, you know, there's a couple things you can do. You can get creative and try to make it a better month, or you can say, hey, you know what, I need some downtime anyway. The truck needs work done. I want to go do something. Why don't I do it in the worst month? Because I'll be missing the least. So, you know, there's a couple different ways we can look at that. But your numbers are looking fantastic. So stay in touch. Keep me informed. But congratulations on doing the hard work. Those numbers look great. Let's go to Texas. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing tonight?
Good. What can I help you with?
I called you a couple weeks ago. I was looking at a 98 Volvo. I had a deposit on it. It was clean background, everything. And the salesman sold it out from under me, even though I had a deposit on it. So I'm looking for another truck again.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, I was rather upset. It took me 4 days to get a hold of him. I knew something was wrong because he was dodging me. And I finally caught him. I caught him on the phone. And he's like, oh, yeah, the other day a guy came in with cash and just bought it, so we sold it to him. But I'll get your deposit back to you. Like, yeah, thanks.
Yeah. What's the point of the deposit? I mean, that's unbelievable.
Hey, I want this truck, but I'll be back. You know, I'm working on it. So I found another 98.
Exactly. And here's what normally happens. When you've got a good relationship with somebody, you put the deposit down, they would immediately call you and say, hey, look, I've got a guy here with cash. Are you really committed to this thing or not? They wouldn't just sell it out or they shouldn't just sell it out from under you like that. All right, so I guess we're looking at another one here.
98 century, 12.7 Detroit, 13s. I'm not big on the gearing or the tires, but it's got a million and a half on it. So the gear, you know, I changed the rear ends out for micro blue and changed the tires to super singles. Those are small things. It's got the right engine, the right transmission in it.
Right.
And so I want to have you check the rig dig and see what you think of it.
Yep, and I'm not seeing anything that would scare me off. It's been owned by four different companies, which isn't unusual for a truck this old. It's had quite a few inspections, but very few out of service. And the out of service stuff seems to be pretty minor. So there's nothing in the rig dig report that would scare me away from this truck at all. How much are they asking for this one?
They're asking $12,900. I just found it today and got the VIN number earlier today. I'm talking to the salesman. He has another truck there that I don't like the specs on at all. This got super singles on it, and it's a 2000. So he's going to talk to the manager and see if they can swap the singles over because the tires are both about even wear, and it's got the XDA X1 singles on it, or on the other truck.
Yeah.
So I would benefit that way. You know, A, because the singles, and B, because they're good singles.
Right. Yeah, that's always a good negotiation point, is to negotiate stuff like that, because it doesn't cost the dealer anything, really, to do that, and it benefits you. So that's kind of one of those win-win negotiation points. So any idea when it had an in-frame?
The salesman said the guy that bought it last time bought it from him, and it had just had an in-frame. That was about 4 years ago. So it's got, you know, 500,000 miles on the in-frame.
Got it. Okay, which is actually kind of ideal because you're basically getting that in-frame free because you could pay $12,000 for a truck without an in-frame. So you're kind of getting the in-frame free, and you have a good 3 or 4 years left on this engine, maybe
that's
more.
You know, it's got enough life left in it that I shouldn't have to worry about anything with it, you know, until I get it paid off and get the money saved up, and then, you know, call Bruce and get with him and put off to them and have magic worked on it, and then be good to go.
Yeah, now this one's looking good. You know, pull the ECM on it next.
That's, I'm talking with Lisa about that. She asked me, and I said, well, before I go and have them pull the ECM on it, I wanted to see if it's even worth looking further into.
Right.
So I will get with him tomorrow and have him
pull
the ECM.
This is definitely a truck I would keep working on.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off this time to Texas again. Weldon, welcome to the program.
Hello. Got a question about, I think I may have an injector problem. In the mornings, whenever I shut off my engine at night, in the morning, I go to start it, and it idles rough. It's got smoke coming out. It's white.
What color smoke?
It's white. And after about 10 minutes, it clears right up, and I run all day, and everything's fine.
How long has this been going on?
I would say about a month now.
About a month. Have you noticed any drop in coolant level?
Well, I had a problem with, I have had, yes.
Okay. And here's what I'm thinking. White smoke is usually condensation, water, or coolant. Black smoke is usually fuel, meaning that would be, you know, an injector that's dripping or leaking overnight or streaming when we start it up. It's more likely that you've got possibly. What year is this engine?
It's a 2000 Century class. It's a 12.7. It had an in-frame.
Possible that you've got a blown head gasket or a cracked head. The easiest way to troubleshoot this with the least amount of cost is with an oil sample. If this is an injector, which I don't think it is, we'll see fuel dilution. If it's a cracked head or a head gasket, we're going to see high levels of sodium and potassium.
Okay. Well, I had I talked to a couple of friends of mine, and they were saying I had a overhead done last year, last August, and so and I've been looking at getting another overhead done here in a pretty short time. They're telling me that my O-rings around the injector. Around the injectors are bad, and I probably need to put that little brass ring that something that
the injector cups.
Yeah, the injector cups.
If we had typically, if we have a bad injector cup, we're actually going to get fuel in the radiator, and we're going to get pressure in the radiator. But what you are seeing right now is it sounds like coolant in the combustion chamber, which would more than likely be a head gasket or a head. But we're kind of speculating, and the easiest, most – I don't even want you to go in and do an overhead, because if it turns out, you know, that it's a cracked head or a head gasket, we're going to be in there tearing things up again. So yeah. I would do the oil sample first.
Okay. All righty. Well, I appreciate it immensely.
You're welcome. And then when you get that oil sample done, give me a call and we'll go over the results. But that's the least expensive step of troubleshooting this problem next. Let's head off to Georgia. Greg, welcome to the program.
Well, hey, Mr. Kevin.
What's up today?
Well, I've had a little excitement this week. I had a customer that I delivered to on Sunday morning at 8 a.m., and by about 8:30, 8:45, I had a hole in the roof.
That's not good.
The very pallet that they were pulling off, they decided to lift the forklift up in the air a little bit too high, and they pushed the roof clean through my trailer, the top of the forklift.
Oh,
yeah. This is a 2012 Great Dane box van.
Oh.
Brand new, pristine, untouched, unscratched, unpatched roof.
Wow.
And, yeah, that was kind of exciting. And had to do a little, you know, negotiating.
Yes.
And had an opportunity to practice a few things and have a few conversations with several different people. And make a long story short, I just picked my trailer up from Great Dane here in Savannah, Georgia this afternoon, and it's got a brand new roof in it.
Wow.
All one piece solid, brand new, factory, just like factory new. The customer paid not only for the roof, but also paid me for my downtime.
Wow. So it looks like you learned a few things in negotiation class.
Might have learned a couple things at the CMC, maybe. Get a little bit of consultation with Jimmy the Junk Man. Got to give him a little shout out there. He helped me a little bit with kind of keeping my head level and giving me a few catchphrases, you know, to be able to. And of course, you know, we developed that relationship at the CMC. So you know, been using him for a little bit of a mentor for a while and. You know, to be able to have that group of people, that team to reach out to and kind of help guide you through situations. I've never been through anything like that before, so it was good to have somebody to work with that might have a little experience in such a situation.
Well,
so,
it certainly paid off.
Thank you
because
for that opportunity
to build
have asked that team.
For a better outcome, really.
You know, I was 135, 140 miles from the house, so I was able to bobtail to the house and take a couple of days at the house and get paid for it.
there you go. Like, so, yeah, it's a bad situation. We'd rather it didn't happen, but when you can negotiate an outcome like this, that's good. That's really good.
It's really not the end of the world. And while they had my trailer in the shop, I was able to get a couple of other little things done, you know, at a little bit of a discount Because we were paying cash for the roof to be done, I was able to negotiate some other things to be done to my trailer that I've been wanting to get done and take advantage of the opportunity the trailer's in the shop anyway. So,
you know, this is one of those lessons that it isn't about what happens to us. Things happen to us all the time, and we're never going to stop that. Bad things are going to happen. There's no way to avoid them. So it's not what happens to us that will determine how our life turns out. It's how we react to the things that happen to us. And that's really
exactly
what you've learned, and what you did so well in this case is you reacted well.
And I think that probably is part of why they were so willing to work with me. You know,
absolutely.
It happened, I was like, wow, you know, okay. No big deal. It happens. You know, I didn't want the guy on the forklift to get too upset and cause more damage.
Yeah.
You know, it's just,
right.
You know, let's get this pallet off the truck and, you know, we'll deal with it. It's, you know, it's going to be, I'm sure, one way or another, it'll get taken care of, you know.
Right.
But luckily, I didn't have another load booked at the time, so I wasn't, you know, under pressure to
yeah.
get my next load and all that. And so if it had to happen, it kind of happened at a, not really a good time, but as good a time as could be.
Well, yeah, it happened. It certainly turned out as good as you could possibly hope for. You didn't have to put off another customer. You didn't have all that pressure. You got the roof fixed exactly the way you want it done, new, not patched, and you got paid for your downtime. You were close to home. Really, you couldn't have asked for this to come out any better.
Yeah, and I was only 30 miles or so from a Great Dane factory
yeah.
shop when it happened. So, because it happened actually in Midway, Georgia, and I you know, went to Savannah to get it fixed. So it was en route to go to the house, really, to get it fixed. So I didn't really... I mean, it was a, I don't know about for the customer, but for me it was a win-win.
Yeah, well, and you know, one of the things I've found, people will say, well, he's just lucky. But I've just found that once you start doing the hard work, once you start doing the things you should be doing, once you start building relationships and all those other things we talk about, once you do all those things, then it starts to look like you become lucky. I just find that the harder I work, the luckier I get.
Point. It really is, and I think that's very true. I did, after you know, everything's resolved here, I did make one final phone call, and I called the agent that I was pulling the load for and congratulated him on having such a responsible and forthright customer, and thank him and profusely and express my gratitude and ask him to also express gratitude, you know, through his channels back to the customer for the way that they handled and conducted themselves in this transaction, because it was very refreshing. I've had my trailer, like I say, two and a half years, and it I've had other minor little incidents. This was the biggest one yet. But I've had several minor incidents with minor damage on my trailer, sidewalls and different things where they've poked and punched and whatever, and everybody always says, oh, that didn't happen here, you know. And,
yeah.
you know, if you buy
well,
a brand new trailer, you're the only one pulling it, you know where it happened.
Let's compare this all the way around to what usually happens. Now, somebody else might have been in there with the same new trailer that they worked hard to acquire, that they're proud of, that they take care of, and when somebody put a hole in the roof, they would have gone ballistic. And they, in their own mind, they would have been justified. They would have been jumping up and down and saying, what an idiot, where did you, you know, hire the guy on the tow motor, why wasn't he more careful? And it would have been a fight from the word go. Things would not have turned out so well with the trailer repair and all those other things. But then beyond that, when you took that additional step to go back and contact the agent and say, thank you, and here's that. Now, the next time that agent is sitting there and he has a really important customer that he's worried about, and maybe it's really good paying freight, you know, it's the good stuff, who is he going to remember? The guy that called after having a problem, after getting a hole punched in his new roof, calling and saying thank you for having, you know, good relationships and good customers, or is he going to remember the guy that went ballistic and was screaming at everybody? Well, he's going to remember both, but I'll tell you who he's going to give the good freight to. We all know where the good freight is going now. So that was a great way to handle this all the way around.
Well, yeah, and you know, there's so many times where you bump a dock and you're tired, and I was really tired. I had actually run about 600 miles straight through to make this delivery, and I was really tired, but it was an outdoor dock, and I was standing outside walking around kind of, and I heard when it happened. I didn't see it, but I heard it, and I was back by my tandems on my trailer, and I stepped up on the side of the dock, and I kind of looked around the corner, and I'm thinking to myself, of course, I really hope that was his product, not my trailer.
Right.
And I see this ray of light shining down through the roof of my trailer, like Moses on the Mount with the Ten Commandments. And it's illuminating this guy on the forklift, and I'm like, okay, that's special.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah.
Congratulations on the way you handled this, and those kind of things pay off in the long run. They really do. You didn't lose your cool. You didn't scream and yell, and some people would have been justified in their own mind doing that. But the outcome this way, all the way around, for everybody, is much better. This is just a win-win for everybody. So let's go to Arkansas this time. Charles, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good. What's on your mind?
Called you a couple weeks ago. I've got 06 International that had the motor completely redone. And I just had the first service through about 2 gallons of oil, and it's blowing a little bit of black smoke. Right before the motor was completely redone, I had the EGR cooler, all that, you know, new put back on. Is anything to be worried about?
So I want to go over this again. How many miles are on it since the rebuild was done?
Right at 15,000.
Right at 15,000. And you've had to put in how many gallons of oil?
2 gallons.
Well, let's wait and see. That's not a good sign. Sometimes, though, I do see a new in-frame go through a couple gallons real quick and then settle down. Let's wait to see what happens in about 50,000. If the oil consumption hasn't slowed down by then that just means for whatever reason the rings didn't seat.
Okay.
Little early to tell. 15,000, I've seen engines do this for, you know, 15 or 20,000 and then just stop or really slow down. So keep an eye on it. You might want to actually run the truck a little harder than normal. There is some thought and theory of running an engine hard will actually help seat the rings if they're having some problem seating. I don't know if there's any truth to it, but you really can't hurt anything, so it's worth a shot.
Yeah, when I called you last time, I was asking you about that, you know, whether running hard or not, because that's what they told me to do.
There's no clear evidence one way or the other.
I run 68-70 talk, so I run at 75. 80 sometimes, you know, and that's hard to me, you know.
And you don't have to just run it hard at high speed. You could also, you know, run it a little harder through the gears, push it a little bit more. But again, no clear evidence that really works. But it also, it isn't going to hurt anything. So give that a try. Give this thing some time. Give it to about 50,000 miles. And then give me a call, and we'll take a look at the oil consumption history and see what might be going on with this thing. Let's go this time to Wyoming. Rusty, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Evan. You know, I've been thinking here lately, you know, years ago, every time you crossed the state line, you had to write your odometer always down, fill out a trip report, you know, state by state, where you went. I haven't had to do that in years. And I was thinking, you know, these companies calculate your fuel tax, and you look at your routing off, like, PC Miler or off your GPS or whatever. Do they calculate your fuel mileage off that type of mileage or the route you really go? Good example. Now,
you
came out of San Diego, and I'm up in Wyoming.
You're leased to a carrier, correct?
I'm not anymore. I used to, but I'm just, you know, the guys that used to calculate fuel tax that way, and they pay the tax, or they calculate the tax.
Right. So most carriers, they do all their fuel tax reporting out of their dispatch system. So their dispatch system says, okay, this guy's going from Cleveland to Dallas, and it captures all the state miles out of that system. Now, obviously, if you go a route other than what their dispatch system said you were going, the numbers are going to be off. Most carriers have a policy that says, we assume you're going to follow standard routing. If you don't, you need to turn your miles into us. I mean, that's the way it's been with a lot of carriers that I've worked with, is they just assume you're going standard routing, and if you do something other than that, you are the one that is supposed to tell them the route that you chose and then, you know, the state miles. But most of the time it doesn't happen that way. Carriers just do the fuel tax based on standard routing. Very few are actually, you know, using real routing or really staying on top of their owner operators to turn it in. But that's the way it should be.
So in this case, Colorado is going to collect IFTA tax, and I don't put no miles on in Colorado.
If the routing is incorrect, yeah, that's what happens.
Interesting. All right, I'm going to have to play some numbers.
In an IFTA audit, a lot of times they'll catch this kind of stuff and that's what an audit is for, and they'll fix it. And then you've got to go back and pay the states that you did drive through, and you might be able to get the refunds from the states you didn't drive through. But this is why IFTA does audits. And what they'll do is they'll look at fuel receipts, toll receipts, logbooks, anything else they can look at and match it up. Because let's go back again to, you know, if you're with a carrier and you're going from Cleveland to Dallas, the standard routing is X, but you decided to go the other way because of weather. Well, obviously, your logbook is going to show which way you went. So it's not hard in an IFTA audit to find the mistakes.
Okay. I'm just wondering how much more it cost me a week to do this now, or around, rather. I'm going to have to get my calculator out and do some calculations.
Yeah, that's really the only way to know, is to calculate it both ways.
Because South Dakota is cheaper than Nebraska, and Wyoming is a lot cheaper than Colorado.
Yeah, you really want to get to a point where you're reporting it the way you're driving it. Then you don't have to worry about an audit.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's go next to North Dakota. Larry, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How's it going tonight?
What's up tonight?
Excellent. Listen, I've got a Meritor 12-speed auto shift transmission, and I know you had one on your FedEx contract, and I'm not sure exactly what the issue is, but I like get a little indicator light on the dashboard. How serious reason it keeps going out every day, like when it gets cold like this? I don't know. I don't know exactly what the issue is, but it seems to be going out all the time, and I don't know what the, maybe it's just an electrical issue, but I don't know.
Yeah, it is electrical. When the light goes out, is it causing any other problems?
No, that's the issue. I can't, like, that's the strange part about it. I mean, the transmission shifts fine, and it goes up and down, no issues at all, but it's just that stupid light goes out.
The good news is everything is still functioning properly, and I don't normally give this advice because I don't like it when things aren't working right. I want to get them fixed, and I want to keep everything working right. But my advice in this case would be ignore that light and don't let anybody touch this thing as long as it's functioning properly.
Yeah. Well, like the transmission itself's got 1.4 million miles on the damn thing. And it's like, as far as I know, because I bought the truck 3 years ago, and as far as I know, it's never been, except for a clutch that I put in 2 years ago, it's never been touched. So
is this a two pedal or a three pedal?
No, it's a two pedal. It's the dead F transmission.
Yeah. Same as mine, which makes it a little more expensive to convert back to a manual if you had to. But as long as the transmission is functioning properly and the only problem is this light coming on and off, I would leave it alone. I wouldn't let anybody touch it.
Okay. Well, yeah, I wasn't sure. But.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it unfortunately, there isn't a lot of support for that Meritor transmission anymore. Very few people know how to fix them, and that's the problem I went through with mine. But if yours is functioning, I would just leave it alone. Let's go to Georgia next. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I got a question about my truck, just like the previous caller had about the white smoke. The other day I was going to Texas, and me and my wife stopped at a Walmart, shut my truck off, walked inside and probably spent maybe 15 or 20 minutes and come back outside. And when I got in my truck and cranked it up, it was smoking really bad for about 5 minutes. And then it stopped. I drove on from there on to Dallas and I was in Texarkana and drove on down to Dallas and the next day and got unloaded. Shut my truck off while I was getting unloaded. When I went to crank it back up, it done it again, but it didn't do it as long as that this time. And it done that a couple of times. And before then, every now and then, whenever I would idle a lot, or not a lot, but idle every night, whatever, to sleep, drive. And whenever I would drive, it would puff white smoke. But it does that every now and then. But this time right here, it done it a couple of days and hasn't done it anymore, other than just if I idle, and then it just starts blowing white smoke whenever I start to take off, and then after I drive it a while, it clears up. I'm not looking at this water. It's a 99 International 34/6 Caterpillar, 1,300,000 miles on it.
No in-frame?
Not that I know of. All the records that I've checked on it, it hasn't had one.
Okay. It's probably time.
Yeah.
And I would do two things, just like I recommended earlier. I would pull an oil sample so we can see what's going on in the oil. And I would start scheduling an in-frame. The reason being at 1.3, and I would also watch your coolant level, at 1.3 million miles, even if the cylinder kits are still in good shape, and they might be, but you've obviously got a problem, could be a cracked head or a head gasket, and you're just at the point where you're risking something failing that we don't see coming. And, you know, you got 1.3 million miles out of it. You've certainly got your money worth out of that engine, but I would seriously start scheduling an in-frame.
Right. Now, if I rebuild this engine, I'm getting my 30-day average is around 7.72 on it.
Okay.
Am I going to lose a significant amount of that on my fuel mileage? And whenever I rebuild it, right now it's at a 375, but when I rebuild it, I want to try to rebuild it up to 475 or 500 on it. If when I do that, am I going to?
If you rebuild it right. For example, if you can get to Pittsburgh Power and have somebody like that do it, not only will you not lose fuel mileage, you should come out of there with higher fuel mileage.
Right.
I mean, if this in-frame is done right, and there'll be a short break-in period, maybe 20 or 25,000 miles, and then after that, it wouldn't be out of the question for this to be an 8-mile-per-gallon truck.
Okay. And I'll get another 1,000,000 miles out of it?
Again, if the in-frame is done properly, you can you might be able to expect another 1,000,000. I usually count on, say, 800,000. And if
right.
we get more, great. But, you know, we should be able to count on 800,000. And, again, you know, if the in-frame, there's a lot of different ways and how they're done and how well somebody does it. But if it's done right, and, you know, you might want to consider MicroBlue, that would certainly bring up fuel mileage, make the engine last longer. So if you get somebody that knows what they're doing, you use good parts, you do the MicroBlue or some of the other things that Pittsburgh Power does, then, yes, you could expect a fuel mileage increase and another 1,000,000 miles out of it. Let's go to Arkansas. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing this evening?
Doing good. What can
I
help you with?
I've got a couple questions. One, super single rims. Just saying, I've heard you say before with the 2-inch offset rims that you can flip them around and actually run them that way and end up with what I think is a 1/2-inch offset.
You know, and I keep meaning to just go check that out myself. It seems like such a simple thing, and I never have. So that's coming from people who have told me that's the case. I've just never physically taken the rims, broken them down, and measured when they're flipped. But, yes, I think that's correct.
All right, because I want right now I'm leased on with a company, and they've got about 25 or 30 of their trucks that are running super singles that they're converting back over to duals. They do not like the super singles whatsoever. They're having too many problems. And they're selling these rims. And they're telling me $150 a piece for each rim.
That's a
and
good
I'm wondering,
price.
Yeah, I'm wondering, and they're all 2-inch offset, but if I can flip them over, I can use them.
Well, and you could, once, I mean, if you physically got the rims, if you can go see where they are, we can flip it around and measure that. And I keep meaning to do it, and I just, every time I've got a chance, I just keep forgetting. So I want to verify that for myself because I'm only going by what other people have told me.
Okay. All right, well, right now all these rims are still on the road. This is something they're just starting.
Okay.
So as these trucks get into the yard, they're going to start yanking them off and everything. And
you know the other thing you could do, just stop into any tire shop that carries the wide single rims and ask them.
Okay. All right, but yeah, that's something else I want to check if that was a good price or not. I've never priced a used
Yeah,
used
$150 for those rims, I would buy those in a heartbeat.
All right. Now, if this deal works out the way they're saying, I'm going to be able to buy as many of these things as I want up until they're out of them. And here in a couple of months, I'm going to leave that company and I'm going to another company. I'm going to start pulling flat for another company. So I was going to buy 2 sets for myself. But I was wanting to put the word out there once I know for sure if these will work flipped over and they've got the prices nailed down. You know, if that's what it's going to be, I'm going to put it out on the CMC page. If anybody's looking for these, you know, Super Single rims, I got a killer deal on them.
Yeah, that's a good idea because I know there are always people looking for rims at a good price. So once you know all that, stay in touch with me and we'll help you get the word out.
All right. My other question, too, is I got a fast fuel system I just had installed this past week. And I'm wondering if there's any problems you guys are seeing other than the fuel flow return where it's filling up one tank faster than the other. If y'all are noticing any other kind of problems out of these units. I just stopped and got fuel and I ran my tanks a little lower than I normally do. I got 2 100-gallon tanks and I ran it down and when I filled up I had put 190 in. So I was extremely low. Right. When I went to fire back up, I actually drained all the fuel out of my line and ran my truck dry. The pump, the fast pump, actually pulled all the fuel out of my line and ran it dry.
Who did the installation?
There's a company over in a shop over in Fort Worth.
I would double check the. I would call FAS first, and then I would get this installation double checked, because no, we don't see any inherent problems with the FAS itself, but we do see problems with installation all the time. This is one of those products that is a little trickier to install. It's not rocket surgery, but I see more installation problems with the FAS than probably any other product. So my guess is this is an installation issue. Sometimes just the right or the wrong size fitting can screw things up. I've seen several problems. So check with FAS and then get this installation double checked. Let's go this time to Arkansas. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mr. Kevin. I got kind of a little bit of a dilemma, so I wonder if you can help me out a little bit. I'm a truck driver out here, at least on the land side. I have my own truck, but on the weekends I go home and I have a big six-horse trailer and I have a big pistol that I want to pull around with, and I'm wondering what would you recommend for me pulling this with, sick of tearing up dualies every 2 years. So I'm wondering what sort of truck you'd recommend to do something like this.
We do the same thing. We pull around a 43-foot fifth wheel that's loaded fairly heavy. I mean, we're pushing the weight limits on ours. We're usually at 25 or 26,000 pounds on the trailer and you know, everything in it. And I love the old, we just bought a 99 Volvo single axle, and it is just fantastic for pulling this kind of stuff. And we found one, it's got 800,000 miles on it, actually a little less than 800,000 miles. We paid $24,000 for it, and I will never wear this truck out. I mean, literally, I could use this truck forever doing what I'm doing with it. They ride nice, plenty of power.
I look at the sport, the Freightliner make a sports chassis, but they want $144,000, and I don't see paying much just to use something at the weekend. So,
that's the crazy part. You can buy, like you said, Freightliner has their business class and their sport model and their crew cab, but they are outrageously expensive, and they hold their price. So even if you find a 6 or 7 year old one, they're still expensive. Really, I would look around for a good used late 90s Class 8 truck. And if you find it already singled out, great. But if you find it in them, they're pretty easy to single out, and they're not that expensive. I've actually done it in the past for free. I've worked with shops where I've taken a tandem axle in and said, you can have all the parts if you'll do the work. So they get rims, tires, brakes, differentials, you know, airbags, all that stuff. I just give them all the parts, and I couldn't get it done that way every time. But normally I don't spend more than $1,000 to single one out. Or you could find one singled. And, I mean, they're available for $15,000 if you look around.
Yeah, I just need something with a bit of a... I got kids, too. I need a tote around me, too, and a wife, and all that fun stuff. So I need to find something that's going to do that. So where do you suggest I look for these sort of things, like Truck Trader and stuff like that? Is that where you suggest I look?
Truckpaper.com is a great place to look. There's also some RV forums where you'll find them already singled out and set up to pull fifth wheels and horse trailers. So if you look up heavy-duty RV trucks, medium-duty RV trucks, they either call the Class 6 and 7, they call medium-duty, and the Class 8 they call heavy-duty. That's the terminology they'll use in the RV world. And there are some forums out there. That's how I found mine. I found mine in an RV forum. and it was already all set up, electric brake controllers, you know, everything I needed to pull RVs. The back was set up more like a crew cab instead of a sleeper. So that's what I would be looking for, and you can find those cheap. All right, so we are all out of time tonight. Sorry I didn't get to everybody's call, but we are looking at, no promises yet, but we are looking at doing this podcast every Thursday. And as we move forward on this, I will give you more information about how you can subscribe to the podcast in case you miss one. You can download it later and listen to it. But we'll get that information to you as we get rolling on this. So look forward to we'll do this again next Thursday, and we'll just grow it from there. So thanks, everyone. Good night, and we'll see you on the live show tonight.